Senate Health and Human Service Committee is called to order Tuesday, March 22nd. We have, I believe, will be a relatively short agenda. Well, it's a short agenda. We don't know how brief it will be, but Senate File 793, Senator Rosen, and if you are ready, Senator Rosen, we will let you proceed.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, fellow members of the committee. Senate File 793, it was basically a culmination or the work from the Elderly Waiver Accountability and Simplification Work Group that was formed in the department. And they were charged with developing a comprehensive proposal to build accountability and administrative simplification to the Elderly Waiver Program. So they also wanted to look at the feasibility of moving elderly waivers out of a managed care system. So these recommendations from that work group is Senate File 793. In addition to promoting the independence and choice of living in a community setting, the Elderly Waiver Program is very cost-effective alternative to a nursing home setting. And at the same time, more seniors are enrolling in Elderly Waiver. The state has faced increased budget deficits, so providers have to control the costs. We all know that. The provider rates have been cut 2 years in a row now, and have also been adversely affected by the implementation of a new rate-setting tool for customized living. For the 65% of housing with services providers that have designated themselves as assisted living, these reductions and changes in payment policy have limited their ability to provide services. The policy development in the past years have also caused lack of transparency and accountability relating to sharing of information and a clear delineation of the roles. Nearly all of the elderly waivers is controlled by the managed care organizations, the MCOs. In 2003, 7.7% of the elderly waivers were overseen by MCOs, and in 2009, 85% of them are now managed by MCOs. Some of the other issues, in 2010, there was an introduction of a new rate-setting tool, as I mentioned before, which is very complex and confusing for clients and the providers. The state has identified the case manager, case coordinator, as the primary agent responsible for the client's health care, but the customized living providers delivers most of the services, so there's a contradiction there. DHS also has created barriers for information sharing between case manager, care coordinator, and the provider, and they're not sure who is responsible or who is accountable. So, Mr. Chair and members, under the Elderly Waiver Program, a person is assessed for their needs using the long-term care consultation process, either by the county or by the health plan that administers the Elderly Waiver Program. Today, the providers, those that actually have the responsibility for delivering the care of the clients, are not a part of the process, except at the end when they receive the individualized elderly waiver customized living plan, which indicates what services are to be delivered. So the providers of elderly waiver services have identified a few gaps in the assessment process that impact the services that clients need and the services that are provided. So this bill attempts to address both the service gaps and the client's needs and wishes. With that, I think I will let my first testifier, which is Mr. Bergstrom from Care Providers. Are you comfortable with going through the bill, or do you want me to go through the bill?
No, we're happy to go through the
okay.
bill.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, again, my name is Todd Bergstrom, and I work with Care Providers in Minnesota, and my colleague Jeff Bostick with Aging Services in Minnesota. Together, we are the long-term care imperative in our efforts here at the legislature. To go over the bill, just to provide a little more background, last summer the two associations put together a work group to address what we were continually getting feedback from our members about their frustration in working with kind of the system that has been created for customized living and 24-hour customized living. And after, I think, four or five intense meetings, we drew up what we thought were fairly reasonable solutions to make the process from assessment of these clients to the determination of what's paid for work better and hopefully improve in a common sense way the outcomes for the client ultimately. And so to go through several what's in the bill, the first thing we put in on section one on page two of the bill, we actually put in allowing the client to allow or request to have the provider at that face-to-face assessment. The way it works right now is there is a long-term care screening document, and that document not only authorizes or determines whether or not a person is eligible for services, certain questions from that document then feed into the payment system for elderly waiver customized living. And the thought behind this is that this would allow the provider to provide information about the client beyond just that kind of two-hour window where the assessor is there about what's been going on in the previous months. The other things that we put in is also to when the case manager comes out and actually addresses the kind of the payment part where they take that assessment and determine what services can be authorized for payment, to actually have the provider present, or not present, but basically make it so the provider is consulted. We see commonly that issues that the provider sees on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis are not necessarily present during that one or two or three or four-hour meeting between the case manager and the client. And then similarly, if you look to, I apologize if I miss anything, but I'm sure Jeff will catch up. If you go to the back on subdivision 6 on page 7, you can also see that one of the things that is not necessarily given to the provider is the actual care plan. It is given to the client, but is not formally mandated to be given to the provider. We think it would make a lot of sense if ultimately that care plan is also not only given to the client, but also to the provider who is ultimately providing the care. And so with that said, I don't know if I missed anything, Jeff, if you want to look at section 6.
Sure. Thanks, Todd, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I just want to emphasize, first of all, that we're trying to create a more collaborative process between the client, the provider of services, and the case manager who authorizes those services. In some cases throughout the state, that process is working fairly well now. And in some cases, there's a breakdown, often because state policy doesn't explicitly include the provider as part of the process of determining what services should be authorized. And the reason why that's a problem is because the provider is often the person who sees the client most often. They spend the most time with them. They know what they need. They know that needs can vary a little bit from day to day, but it's more than just, as Todd said, a one or two or three-hour window into what the person needs. They've been there providing services often for a while before these assessments concerned. They understand the needs that the individuals have, but often better than anyone else. And we're saying that if the consumer, we're saying a couple things. If the consumer would like the provider to be present as part of this process, that the consumer can authorize that. If the consumer does not want the provider to be part of it, and the provider will not be. And the other thing is that the case manager, I believe the phrase we use in various sections here is that they need to consult with the provider of service before they finalize the care plan. What will occasionally happen now is that a provider gets a care plan back that doesn't appear to bear any relationship to what the person's actually receiving on a daily basis, and then you have to go back to the case manager and kind of work through those differences. If that were all done up front, we believe the process would work better than it does now. As to Section 6, there are two key pieces, I think, here under D and E that we'd like to point out. D we see as an important step towards protecting consumer choice. It essentially says that if there's a provider who participates in the elderly waiver program, that the payer can't tell the individual is eligible for elderly waiver benefits, that they can't use that provider. we haven't seen this as a huge problem yet, but it has emerged where there will be established contract networks of providers, and if the feeling of the county or of a managed care organization is that they don't need to contract with additional providers, then people are essentially unable to use their benefits in a place that they would prefer, whether because it's closer to their home or because it's viewed as a better provider than one of the alternatives. Just in general, we see that as being important to protect consumer choice, competition, and those kinds of values. And item E in that section is basically an administrative burden that's placed on the provider now to deal with the spend down amounts that are calculated by the county and that can change on a regular amount. And when we switch to the managed care process, it gets very technical in terms of how it works, but you are no longer able to be a designated provider where you would basically not have to deal with those changes. It would be sorted out by the state system. Now that all the billing and payment, or 85% of it, as the center pointed out, goes through managed care organizations, it's added a lot of complication to the system for providers, and one of the complications is in dealing with changes in spend down.
Thank you. And members, there is what's called a preliminary fiscal note that I understand represents a partial analysis of the bill. There is some, at least according to what I've understood, that there's additional work that needs to be done that is likely to result in additional cost to the bill. And I'm just wondering if there's somebody from the department that's here that could speak to the fiscal note and perhaps explain a little bit about what we're seeing here. I'm sorry, can you speak into the microphone so we can catch?
Lisa Rodegard from the Department of Human Services. The fiscal note is preliminary. I know people are meeting about it again today. But we did assign costs to many sections. And then there is also some loss of FFP on any of the retroactive eligibility pieces.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Ms. Rodegard.
Can you not hear me?
I can't hear you at all.
Oh.
You need to have the microphone. It's very
pull
close.
It right up like you're a rock star.
Hi.
Got it.
I am not the fiscal note expert, but I am here today. I did send you a summary of our analysis. There are costs related to this bill. I think the entire thing will be done tomorrow, today, by the end of the day. There are costs associated with additional appeals officers. There are costs associated with retroactive eligibility for the waiver, which is currently not allowed under the federal law. So if to the extent there is some of that happening, then we would not get FFP on that based on some of what's in this law. And there are some systems costs, I think, associated with the spend down piece of this that would require some changes to the way designated providers are allowed under the system. But you're going to see, some additional work on that in the next day. Are there specific questions about the fiscal note that I may or may not be able to answer?
Well, here's a couple, but one question. The analysis says Section 6, partial information. I'm assuming that the fiscal note for the other sections is complete. It's Section 6 for which there are partial costs.
Yeah, I know that healthcare is meeting about the managed care and the retro pieces. Yeah.
But it's your understanding, Ms. Rodegard, that the fiscal note will be completed sometime today or by
tomorrow? Yeah, I know there was a healthcare meeting scheduled.
Okay.
Yeah, we did some work in the aging division where I come from, and then it got passed along to some of those folks.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, it would appear to me that this bill is going to drive up rates in a Medicaid program where the rates are already very high. And I guess I'm just wondering about the wisdom of doing something like that in this budget climate that we're facing.
And Senator Rosen, did you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Brooklyn. Our hope is that it does not drive up the rates. We're hoping that there is more coordination and accountability. But that is one of the fears. And I do think that this bill and the agenda that came from the working group this summer needs to continue on with some discussion. Obviously, we have a substantial fiscal note that might even get larger with this, but I do believe the basic premise of the bill, the accountability, the streamlining is in place. There are some people that may want to mention specifically to the issues, especially in Section 6, that they have problems with the managed care organization. So, or public health, they may want to say something to it. But the hope is that we are coordinating and we're moving along. It's a little
Well, Mr. Chairman,
disappointing.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rosen, I guess I could ask the question differently then. Are these issues of such paramount importance that a rate cut to pay for the bill would be something you would support?
Senator Rosen.
Do I have to answer that, Mr. Chair?
Well, Senator Rosen, that may go beyond the scope of what you're prepared to talk about, I guess. It's a pertinent question. I'm not trying to say it isn't pertinent, but I don't know if it's pertinent to the bill, I guess. But Senator Higgins, did you have a question? Okay.
Other snarky comment. Go for it.
It's that time of year, I think, where we have to entertain those a little bit. Other questions from the committee? Senator Rosen, I have on the list Ms. Holston, Ms. Thurlow. Are they wanting to testify as well, or are they just here for not wanting to testify?
I believe they're here for support.
Okay.
But I believe maybe Julie Ring from Public Health might want to mention a few
things. Yes, I got notice that Catherine Commit and Julie Ring interest in providing some testimony. So if there are any other questions, why don't we invite those folks to come up and help us out.
And Mr. Chair,
Senator Rosen.
While Ms. Ring or someone is coming up, Mr. Bostick would like to mention or answer Senator Berglund.
Mr. Bostick, please.
Just a quick comment on the fiscal note, and not having seen it before this morning, I haven't had a lot of chance to look at it closely. But on the appeals piece, which seems to be a high part of the cost here, I'd point out that the individual client has the right to appeal now. Determinations made through this process. What we're adding in this bill is the right for the provider to appeal on behalf of the client. So there may be some additional costs related to that, but I would question how often that would actually happen as a result of this and whether there would really be a need for this many additional hearing examiners, et cetera. It's kind of an unknown, as you often deal with in fiscal notes, but my immediate reaction is that I would not expect it would add a significant level of cost to allow that possibility of a provider appeal.
And Mr. Bostick, I appreciate that. I'm also not having seen this before. Part of what I understand the fiscal note is suggesting is that that there may be some additional appeals, but that they also may result in higher rates at a greater frequency than what currently happens, and I think that's part of the assumption and the cost as well.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Berglund.
I mean, it only stands to reason whenever clients have more assistance in filing appeals that there will be more appeals.
Do we want Ms. Ring and Ms. Commit? Are you?
Excuse me,
Senator Rosen.
Mr. Bergstrom would like to comment also.
Mr. Bergstrom.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, I would just point out, certainly if there are areas that are cost prohibitive, that's one issue. But going back to some of the central things where we're just asking for the long-term care consultation to be shared with the provider, for the care plan to be shared with the provider, for the provider to be present if requested, it's not clear to me why that would cost any additional, and I assume it would only improve the outcomes of making sure the client's getting specifically what they need.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Sharon?
Did I understand what you just were saying to mean that at a minimum you'd like to see the portions of the bill that relate to allowing a provider of customized living services present during the process of assessment, that would be the minimum that you'd like to achieve from this bill today, and that the other segments which might drive up the costs, such as the participating in the appeals determination or the other retroactive portions of the bill, if those were removed from the bill, although that's not your preference, that at a minimum you'd like to leave the committee having the option in place where this provider could be present and have access to the full reports. Did I understand that correctly?
Mr. Bergstrom?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, I think anything we can do to improve what we think can be improved, such as the things that don't cost money, would be the step in the right direction. So, yes.
All right. Thank you. I think now we're ready to hear from Ms. Commit and Ms. Ring. Could you please join us? Ms. Commit.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Catherine Commit, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, which represents the 7 nonprofit health plans here in Minnesota. Our main concern with this bill is that it deletes the language in the current law that prohibits providers from having any financial interest in the provision of services. So it really takes away that fix to make sure there isn't a conflict of interest. Giving providers more influence over the amount and cost of services provided to clients would increase cost to the system and also increase the risk of fraud. We don't believe that a provider should have access to the information gathered in the long-term care assessment or the case mix score. Knowing the case mix means knowing what a client has to spend on services. It would be similar as going to an auto dealership and having to tell the salesperson how much money you had in your checkbook and then negotiating an amount for the purchase of the car. I just want to respond to a couple of comments that were made by some committee members. I think that in response to Senator Sharon's comment about how to make this bill a little bit more workable, one thing that might be considered is to simply delete everything except Section 5 of the bill, which would allow the provider of the services to get a copy of that care plan. That might be one way. Certainly is most likely to be no cost to do that. And then I just want to respond to an item in Section 6, item number D on line 7.24. And essentially what this is an any willing provider clause. And the whole reason that the state made the decision to move towards managed care, controlling or managing these types of services for this population is to control costs. What this language on line 7.24 does is essentially eliminate any possibility of controlling that cost because any provider anywhere in the state who wants to participate in this program would be able to do that. And one of the reasons for having managed care is managed care selects a network of providers to make sure they have a network that's not too big and not too small, but just right of the most highly qualified, lowest cost providers. And it's from that network that the services are provided. So I think if this language were to be enacted, it would really drive up costs, and we would have concerns about that. I know Ms. Ring also had concerns. I was just going to also say that we do use the providers that the counties contract with, so this would be a big change. I know that having the provider involved in filing an appeal would be a huge departure from current practice. I understand there'd be problems with the federal law and how that would interact there, and it's typically not the role of the provider to be filing for a
Thank you, Ms. Commit. With respect to Section 1 of the bill, is the language that is being suggested to be added in Section 1 problematic for you?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I think the language that is in Section 1, especially the stricken language, is clearly I think that is problematic. I think it would be preferable to delete the new language and restore the stricken language because you don't want to have a provider there who has a financial interest trying to make these decisions. It's just not the right. It's not the right.
And Ms. Commit, I'm trying to understand here. I was assuming that Section 1 was asking that the provider be a participant in the assessment only. And I'm just trying to understand what would be the problem from your point of view of having the care provider participate in assessing the needs of the client. Does that, in your view, present a conflict? Or?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I guess to put it simply, I think that if the provider is there, they will have greater influence to affect the types and quantities of services that would be ordered for the client, and I think that would drive cost.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
I tend to look at Section 1 as being more of a coordination of care.
Okay. Well, Senator Bergen.
Mr. Chairman, I really would question how much this would be voluntary on the part of the clients, because I am sure the provider would put pressure on them living in this place to have them be present. And you know, people always have to worry about if they're going to be given 30 days notice. And, you know, so if vulnerable people feel pressure to have a provider be present, the provider will be present.
Yeah. And I think, Ms. Ring, did you also want to make a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Please bring the microphone close so that we can catch your remarks.
It is very daunting to have it that close. I don't feel like I can look at you when I'm that close. Just real briefly, I appreciate the opportunity to share our concerns with the committee. I'm the executive director of the Local Public Health Association of Minnesota. I'm here on behalf of the counties. We also conduct these assessments as well as managed care organizations. And our concern actually is with Section 1, the part that I think folks were hoping to lean toward, as one of our primary concerns in the bill, because from our perspective, the long-term care consultation, the assessment that happens between the public health nurse and the client, is a face-to-face, individualized assessment that takes between an hour and 2 hours, which is quite daunting for a frail, vulnerable person. But it's a one-on-one assessment to determine what the client believes their needs are for care. And then the rate is set based on that. Our concern is having the customized living representative present during that assessment does have an influence on the ultimate amount of service that is authorized for that client. We do have concerns about undue influence in that setting. And I think the other concerns about the bill have been stated by the health plans and by the department. But overall, this is supposed to be a neutral process where we determine a level of care that's necessary for the client. And we think that's best done in a neutral environment without the person who will actually be paid based on the end product of that assessment present.
And Mr. Chair.
Senator, go ahead, Senator.
Just in response, I do think this section is something that we can work on right now. Providers are by law prohibited from being in a part of the assessment. And I think, to have consistency, a continuation of care, and so everybody's on the same page, I think this is something that can be worked out, you know, and so, for the best of the client. But I'm not sure if we're really, you know.
Well, maybe I could just suggest that it sounds like that there are some fiscal issues that we may not get the full impact of for another day or so.
Right.
But there may be parts of the bill that do not have fiscal impact that we could contemplate, including, I think Section 5 was mentioned earlier, perhaps with Section 1, if there was some agreement in language that could be reached by you and the other interested parties who have raised some concerns, that something we may also want to consider, so maybe that could be a continuing discussion. But I think, Senator Sharon, did you have a question?
Yes. I was just going to suggest that I think I would love Ms. Ring to respond to a thought I have, that what we're talking about in an assessment is data collection. You want that to be as objective as possible, and what you're commenting is you don't want it unduly influenced by somebody who is motivated by what the outcome of that assessment is from a financial perspective. But we do want to do thorough data collection and an assessment process. So, and I don't think it's unreasonable if somebody's been a provider of care for a person that they might have some insights or some data that should be collected in relationship to the care. So if there could be language that would separate the individual assessment and then allow an opportunity for the care provider, if they have data, that they'd like to have an opportunity to get input into the process that that broadens and expands the accuracy of your data collection, I think that might be a reasonable thing, and I think speaks to what the concern is that I've heard, at least from providers in my area, that that they sometimes feel as though they have insight from experience that would be helpful, especially with a frail person or a person who has some limited ability to communicate what their needs are. So what is the system that does not give undue influence to the setting of rates, but does allow you to do a more thorough assessment? I think that there might be a way to find a way to accomplish good assessment.
Right. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Speak into the microphone.
Look into my elbow. Like a good public health person, I see.
This is the health committee.
I applaud that. So.
Mr.
We'll
Chairman.
Come back to over here, Senator Newman.
There's a number of items in this bill that really are of concern to me. And so my question is it anticipated this bill is going to be laid on the table? Are we going to vote on it? What's going to happen here?
Senator Newman, I think what we're going to do is lay this over for possible inclusion. There are some issues that with the fiscal note that we don't know what those are. We also, I'm getting a sense that there may be some parts of the bill that could be non-controversial, or there could be some way to accommodate the interests of both parties. So I want to allow that to go forward. So I'm not intending to have a vote today, but just to lay it over and give the parties some chance to work at this, and we'll see what comes
up. Then under those circumstances, Mr. Chairman, I'll refrain from questions at this point.
And Mr. Chair, this is a long-term care imperative agenda initiative, and it does need some work and some of the people coming together to address these issues. I think the wish is to keep it solid moving forward. The fiscal note, of course, is an issue, but if not to peel out anything at this point, like Section 5, and just keep it moving forward and see what we can do with that fiscal note. But I do think there are some very substantial issues to this that should be addressed.
Right. Well, that would be, as I understand it, that's why we have the committee, so that we can bring things and perfect them, we hope, in the course of what we're doing. So I appreciate that. Are there other questions or any other comments from members of the audience? Well, then, members, I think what we will do is we will lay this over and look for further input from the author. And if there are no other questions, then we are adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thanks.